I would now like to ask Mr. Mike McStravick come forward and speak on the interesting topic of Nehemiah. Now, second shortest man in the Bible, Nehemiah, only surpassed by Bildad the Shuhite. All yours, Mike.
Thank you, Brother Dan. Nice to have that introduction. Good evening, everyone. I'm a little bit disappointed because I was really hoping to, some of you will be happy, some of you will be sad, because I was hoping to have our class in the activity room tonight, because I wanted it to be a little bit more discussion-oriented than we normally have. We had a little bit of a breakout last class, and you know, I think you honored the spirit of that breakout last time, but it was simply a function of turning around to the people behind you or beside you. So I would like to do something like that again tonight. I was hoping to do it a little bit in the back room, but our furnace is not heating that room, so those of you who don't like that setting will be pleased to hear that. But anyways, if you would bear with me at some point, I did, as I said, build a number of questions and for consideration into our class this evening. So we have learned a lot, or at least I have learned a lot, about the character of this man, Nehemiah, or Nehemiah, as the transliteration seems to suggest. You know, in the first class was almost 100% focused on him as an individual and to trying to familiarize ourselves with Nehemiah and his characteristics. But then as we continue to do our studies, and this study is no different, you know, we continue to see issues that would confront Nehemiah. And so that helps us continue to build on our understanding of how he approached issues and again, gives us more of a sense of his character. So, for example, the second class that we had, which would have been in the last program, you know, gave a number of responses of Nehemiah when there were signs of trouble. Signs of trouble from those from the outside of the city walls who really were trying to disrupt the success that was taking place, to disrupt the effort from the outside. And we saw how many outsiders would use tactics like gossip and mocking and threatening to try to disrupt the rebuilding process. And then we also could get a sense that to those who weren't fully committed to this onerous task of rebuilding the walls, you know, they could be discouraged by some of the things that were taking place. But Nehemiah's character we saw, you know, and his resolve to see God's plan through to the end, was able to help those people to push through and to continue with their efforts and to push through their doubts. And so last week, you know, the finger pointing sort of came inwards, didn't it? And that's where we had a little bit of a breakout session, you know, in the midst of everything. The accusations that we saw started happening now with the community that was inside the city walls. And the accusations started to become stronger and stronger. Such that in short order that if Nehemiah hadn't intervened and done something, made a decision, that, you know, it seemed, you know, very evident that it would have been disastrous because it was becoming and reaching a boiling point in the ecclesia. And it seemed very evident that oftentimes people can tolerate the mockings and the badgering of those from outside of these doors. Because, you know, they do not know what we have. They do not have what we have, and they don't know what we know. But once we're confronted with problems from those who do have what we have and do know what we know, but they decide to disregard the things for the sake of their own benefit, that becomes a huge problem within a community. And last week we looked at the fact that the rich had mortgages and loans with their poor brethren. And they charged them interest to boot. And they'd also taken their other children's slaves to help them do their daily tasks. There was no way for those to redeem them back to their family. We took a look at that. Now, I think I can say honestly, brothers and sisters, that when I think about the biggest struggles that I've had in my life, in the truth, it had not to do with the conduct or the activities of those around me, that those that live in the world. But rather, it had to do with the conduct and activities of those who have committed themselves, as I have, to a life in Christ. And I suspect that may be each one of our own lived experiences. Troubles from within, if allowed to exist, and pose a great challenge to our walk in the truth. Some people could say, oh, well, that's their life. It's up to them how they live it. But to others, they can't say that. And it's a great puzzle, and it causes much stumbling. And even to the point where they might drift away from the ecclesia. Nehemiah confronted the issues with those who had been neglecting to follow the truth. And last week we saw that they had reached a new height in their togetherness. Debts were forgiven, interest unlawfully collected was repaid and returned, and those committed to slavery were redeemed back to their family. And so tonight, brothers and sisters, we hope to see what's next. We've seen the coming together of a number of positive factors in Nehemiah's time. The people have seen the value in working together. They're actively doing their part to repair the damage in the area closest to them, closest to home. And we get a sense of spiritually within their control. And once these things have all been satisfactorily addressed, Nehemiah then seeks to bring solidity to the ecclesia, to help strengthen them, to maintain their faith, and to build their futures together. Ecclesias go through waves, don't they, brothers and sisters, just like us as individuals. We go through high points and then through some low points. And what wise counsel it is, once reaching such a wave of success as what we see in Nehemiah, that he has seen here in Jerusalem, that he now capitalized on it by helping to bring strength and self-sufficiency to the brothers and to the sisters. And so let's take a look tonight at what things Nehemiah was able to do in his time there to help bring some stability to a somewhat fragile community. Now, before moving into that section, because I've been trying to go chapter by chapter to some extent, before we go there, we saw in chapter 6, which we had read this evening, one more continued effort to undermine the attempts that Nehemiah had made and to isolate Nehemiah from the tasks at hand by the outsiders. Because the outsiders knew very well that Nehemiah was the glue that was bringing this phenomenal change together. If they could quench his success somehow, if they could somehow isolate him from the people, the rest would crumble around him. They understood that. And then they would just get back to the way it was before. Look at the tools that are being employed in the effort to do this. Let's go to Nehemiah again. If you're not there, if you've closed the Bibles, to Nehemiah chapter 6. And we read verses 1 to 4. When it was reported to Sanballat, Tobiah, to Geshem, the Arab, and to the rest of our enemies that I had rebuilt the wall, and that no breach remained in it, although at that time I had not set up the doors to the gates. Then Sanballat and Geshem sent a messenger to me, saying, "Come, let us meet together at Shepharim in the plain of Ono." But they were planning to harm me. So I sent messengers to them, saying, "I am doing a great work, and I cannot come down. Why should the work stop while I leave and continue down to you?" They sent these messages to me four times in this manner, and I answered them in the same way. Okay, so remember I said we were going to have a little bit more discussion tonight. If you remember, Jesus made a comment in Matthew chapter 10 and verse 16 when he says, "Behold, I send you forth as sheep in the midst of wolves. Be ye therefore wise as serpents and harmless as doves." Okay, so what do we understand he meant by that? Wise as serpents, harmless as doves. Anyone? Just so I can hear better. Jeremy? Yeah, I think exactly what I was thinking. It's wise as serpents. As we understand, you know, we've heard that expression, serpent thinking. We understand the type of thinking of those who are of the flesh, fleshly thinking, we might say. Okay, and then you know then it goes on to say harmless as doves, and I think harmless as doves has to do then with us applying wisdom in terms of responding to that type of thinking, that kind of fleshly thinking. And so, if we now go back to verse 1 to 4 in Nehemiah chapter 6, how would we explain what was going on? What tools were being employed by Sanballat, Tobiah, and others to this situation? What tools were they trying to apply? And this is the Nehemiah being, you know, understanding serpent thinking. Well, they were trying to start a rumor later on. We're in verses 1 to 4. Let's start with 1 to 4 first, because there's three different sections where they actually employ three different things. So Sean's got to one of those already. But what was the tools that they were trying to use potentially here to have Nehemiah come out? Your thoughts? They're having him come out under a false pretense. Like, hey, let's just work this out. Come on. Let's be adults. Come on out. Let's go to Ono. Interesting place to go, if that's the way you pronounce it. And let's talk this out like men. Okay? Let's just come on and we'll just work this out. Right? So that seems to be a tool that they're using to pretend that they really were interested in working something, some other arrangement out. So there's the serpent, potentially serpent thinking. What's the dove-like response? And why would I call it a dove-like response? See, it's hard to get talking happening in this setting. No, you didn't. You're just jumping ahead. That's okay. I mean, you know. He says, "I'm doing really great stuff here." Right? He wasn't like, "I know exactly what you're up to. What do you think? I'm dumb or something?" Like he's like, he didn't provoke back. He didn't try to get something that was going to create some sort of rage in response. He said, "Hey, I'm really busy doing some really great stuff over here. Thanks anyways." But, you know, so he did it four times. And yet he was able to to get this kind of, just kind of keep it moving along and just kind of deflect it a little bit, right? So that was, I think, again, we can see that taking place there. He doesn't accuse back. So, 5 to 9, now we can go into Sean's section here. I won't read the section again, but only to say that what tool was being employed here by Sanballat? What did he do? He sent what? A personal letter? Oh, open letter. So what's going on with an open letter? Was that accidental? So what happens with an open letter? So everybody can see it. And so in that open letter, it's sort of, you know, it's again comes across as a genuine attempt. Hey, I'm just trying to, you know, set up Nehemiah for some things here, which were false accusations. But they plant the seed of deceit in the reader's mind. And so what could he be trying, what would that serpent thinking be trying to do? He's trying to undermine and have people turn against and question, well, what is your motives? What are you really trying to do here? So again, we see this kind of thinking that's taking place, on behalf of Sanballat. And in this case, Nehemiah's response is he directly addresses that because he had to do it in front of those around him. Because they are now, you know, potentially wondering, maybe in their mind. And so his response was, you're inventing these things in your own mind. And maybe, you know, we can understand that Sanballat would have been doing this, if she was on the other foot, this might have been Sanballat's intentions. But he had to sort of put that down. So that's, again, we see the some of these techniques. Verses 10 to 14, now we have a new introduction of the house of Shemaiah, the son of Deliah, who was confined at home. He says, let us meet together in the house of God within the temple, and let us close the doors of the temple, because they're coming to kill you. So why not go and hide here? So again, what's the serpent thinking that Nehemiah was feeling a bit... he was recognizing what was happening here. What was the problem with the anything wrong with that? A supposed friend giving him an idea because, you know, these guys are going to come kill you. Let's go lock ourselves and hide in here. What was the situation? Was that it was a potential lie? Yeah, you know, they didn't come in the city. But who's allowed to go into the temple? Nehemiah? He wasn't allowed to go in the temple. So right off the bat, it was a bad idea. Like, he's not allowed to go in the temple. So he's like, well, even though it sounds like a good idea, I can lock myself in here. Because we read earlier that I'm finished the walls, but the gates and stuff and the doors aren't on yet. So they could get in a certain point. But all of a sudden he's going, wait a minute, this would lead to something that would put me in a situation that would compromise me. And then what would happen? Think anybody would find out? Then they'd be able to accuse him of something that he had done. Because he had done it, and he shouldn't have. And so again, we start to see this attempt at undermining Nehemiah. And so what we see here are the different tools... I'm hoping that we're seeing here anyways, are these different tools that are being employed by the individuals to try and get Nehemiah in a compromising position. And so what was Nehemiah's dove response? His response was, should such a man as I flee? Should I? So he wasn't saying, again, he didn't say, I know you're trying to trick me here. He said, I'm no better than anybody else. I'm in this together. Everybody else is in here with walls and gates that are still not completed. He didn't say, I'm not going there. He says, should such a man as I flee? So, like, I'm just like anybody, other person. If I'm going to get attacked, I'm going to get attacked. So, again, I think we can see a little bit of the techniques that were being used by Nehemiah in this effort. So, at the end of the chapter, we're told that the wall was completed in 52 days after the initial work had been done. And so, to think, all the events up to this point had taken place in a month and a half. And once it all was finished, everyone around them, it tells us, recognized that this work had been accomplished with the help of God. So if God would help the people accomplish this physical task, surely He can help them accomplish the much more needed task of spiritual rebuilding. And so the work on restoration of the wall, as I said, 52 days, and now this more important work was ready to begin. Work that can only begin once everyone inside feels safe and secure. Work that can only truly begin once the major barriers to ecclesia building are removed. Those barriers that were causing much upset amongst one another, having set these aside, now they can begin together that rewarding task of rebuilding their spiritual worship. And bringing together the ecclesia. So I just want to give a bit of a high-level summary, because I know I'm not going to get through all of the components in this class tonight on how, you know, Nehemiah was able to solidify, to some extent, you know, the brothers and sisters there. But we'll start in chapter 7. We'll take a look at, you know, how peace was secured and some initial regulations that Nehemiah established for the continued safety of the city. And then they went on to enumerate the brothers and sisters. Chapter 8, so we'll start back, they go right back to the basics. You know, the public reading of the law. And helping ensure that the words that are being read are understood. Those mourning are told to turn their mourning way of thinking into rejoicing into what God is accomplishing now. Stop looking back. Start looking forward. Chapter 9, we'll see a national day of humiliation. As every single member comes in sackcloth. Can you imagine what a highly visible display to all involved of each and every individual's commitment and rededication as they all together confess their sins? And this is then followed up by a communal devotional prayer in chapter 9. Then in chapter 10, we see the sealing of a covenant joined together the commitment of the people, the priests and all those with knowledge and understanding, to join with their kinsmen and to commit or recommit themselves together. And as I said, we definitely won't be covering all of that this evening, especially because one of the things I had committed to last class was bringing back the suggestion, some of the things that we heard in your discussions last time, in the small discussion groups. So for those of you who were here last class, or maybe for those who weren't here last class, anyways, we asked a question, and then we got you to discuss it for about 5 minutes. And the question was, given that there were obstacles that Nehemiah was confronted with brothers and sisters at the time, do we have obstacles as brothers and sisters in this community, in this room right here? Do we have any obstacles to our worship? Things that we experience that maybe pull us back or tear us down a little bit from our walk? And so we had you all spend about 5 minutes discussing those things. As we turned that question back onto ourselves. And so I'm going to do is I'm going to show you some of the answers that I was able to collect, and thank you for those who I was able to get them from. And so remember, the answers that I'm putting up are from people in this room who provided them to me in your group. So I obviously, no, we don't need to have names attached to them, but just to know that these are comments from your brothers and your sisters, okay? What I want to do then after this, as I said, it had to take a couple of minutes, is to take some of these obstacles and spend a few minutes talking about, well, if these are obstacles for my brothers and sisters, are there things that I can do to help remove that obstacle? Okay? So that's kind of where I wanted to take it. I know a little bit different than some of our comfort zones go, but let's give it a go. So, the first one I had to abbreviate because some of us, you know, provided me with like lots of detail. And so this one says, when we don't feel the need to improve or participate or get offended, uncomfortable when we are questioned. So I'll give the more fulsome response. I'll read the whole point. It says, as an ecclesia, we don't have a formal or practical peer review process. So therefore, we either don't feel the need to improve, we either are okay to slip through the cracks, doing little, or we get offended and uncomfortable when we are reviewed. And so, again, I don't want to sort of put words in people's mouths, but this seems to be a function of how accountable we see ourselves as to each other. It's a little bit of, am I my brother's keeper? I mean, I know they can't tell me what to do and I can't tell them what to do. That seems to be a little bit of what this particular comment is. And I know I'll hear from the person afterwards if I'm paraphrasing too much. But I put that up there as a comment. The second comment says, our relative wealth has led us to become independent. Results in people becoming less involved as a group or family than would have been the case historically. We interact with each other less and our interactions become more formalized around specific events or social activities. I think that one's fairly complete. I didn't truncate that too much. But again, it's sort of talking about that idea that, you know, we have the opportunity much more regularly nowadays to become self-sufficient and to stand on our own, and therefore we are independent, and that has some ramifications, potential ramifications, if we don't watch them. And so that, again, was another item put forward. And then the other item here says, in the past, people didn't really have more time to study God's Word than we do now, yet many found time to do this in one form or another. Both modern careers and entertainment encroach into our ability, time, and desire to think through God's Word. So those are some fairly comprehensive, so some good, rich discussions that took place last week. I was pretty pleased with the discussions there. But those are, I call those, these ones are more at the sort of the philosophical, we have to sort of take that away and think with our own self-assessing lens, you know, whether we are affected by these things. So these topics. But then I have another set of topics that were discussed as well. And so these ones are a little bit shorter, and these ones are equally significant, I'd say. And as I said, the last ones I would characterize as retrospective. You know, we have to sort of think back. They require us to do that self-assessment. But this list, I'm going to use the expression, they're more present continually. Like, there's something that we have to be always mindful of in our momentary interactions. So, again, I built this list from those of you who provided it, so thank you for that. And I see that these areas, and hopefully you'll see some of these areas, can be very easily overcome if they're in our conscience stream, if we're aware of them and we're aware of how we approach the different situations. So The first one that I heard from a number of you, I've phrased it in a number of different ways, but it's terms like class distinctions, cliques, and clans were used. And so, you know, what I heard is it seems that there's a feeling that we also, like Nehemiah, you know, are at risk of making distinctions within our community. The second one I've called ecclesial conversations. You know, what do others come and talk to us about after meeting? And again, these are the more detailed components of that. What do we talk to one another about while we're at meeting and after meeting? Is it uplifting? Is it related to our spiritual walk? Again, these are my words. These are words of what I've collected from people in this room. Or is the conversation about business, or to say something critical or superficial? And I think that one's huge, really. Sometimes we ask ourselves, how superficial can our chatter be? So that was one other one. Now, closing the age gap, building personal relationships with the young and old, and mentorship. How are we doing with that? Attendance. It can be discouraging. Again, these are the words of the person providing it. It can be discouraging to see a small number of consistent attenders. It makes us sad to see a low level of energy where it comes to ecclesial service and activity. Positivity. Some find that sometimes we are more prone to tear down than to build up in our conversations. Negativity can become an obstacle to someone feeling valued. And this last one is being genuine in our conversations, that we're conveying ourselves as being genuinely concerned about what they're saying and what they're sharing with us, rather than somehow turning the conversation around and making it about ourselves. So again, those were some of the real items that were raised for us last time. And so what I wanted to do, because those ones are shorter, what I want to do is I've put them up here for us, and I want to spend some time, 5 minutes, just discussing them to some extent. Now, I do want to pull attendance out of this list of discussion. And why do I say that? Why would I say that? It's negative, but I'm pretty sure that most people who come to Bible class have a priority on I don't want to put blanket statements, a priority on attendance. And so, you know, obviously, everyone in the room would probably have a bit more attachment to attendance, and the result is, well, just come more. So I want to take that one out of the mix, and talk about 1, 2, 3, 4, the other 5. Okay, so what I want to do is try to split us up in some way. Maybe it's just, again, trying to group yourself a little bit. You know, maybe Dan and Caitlin and Mark can kind of go back a couple rows and just talk with that group there, and just talk about. So first of all, what I want you to do is if you feel comfortable, talk about, you know, are any of these experiences legitimate experiences that either you can recognize or that you've had experience with, so that, again, it becomes real. But then also talk about what can be done to address it. Okay, so tangible ideas about how we can behave differently, and maybe even come up with some fun ideas about, we're doing that again, or something, to how we can be conscious of these things, so that we can, because if each one of those is a potential obstacle for one of you and in this room, or multiple of those are obstacles, how do we get rid of that? How do we take that obstacle away and not make it real? So, just to make sure that the task, you're going to go into some groups. Just talk about it for 3 to 5 minutes. Maybe the first couple minutes just, are any of those, do any of those resonate for some of you? Hopefully they do, because I got them from you. But do any of those, are any of those real for you? And then what steps, what tangible actions can you take to sort of remove that obstacle? Is that clear? Okay. So we'll just take a minute and we'll split. So if you want to just, some of you just want to turn around to do a discussion, that would be great, and just kind of unite together there. So Bob and Diana and Sharon, just sort of maybe like the ones behind you, if that's okay. Thank you. got one more minute and then we'll get everybody to go back. Thank you. Okay, I thought that at some point it would kind of die down and everyone would kind of tell when they're finished, but everyone's carrying on. So maybe we'll try and stop it there. Am I interrupting a heavy thought? No? Okay. Yeah? Good? Okay. So I guess the other thing we can do take notes. Okay, thank you for everyone for your engagement with that. Thank you. I appreciate it. I know it's a little different, I know, outside the norm of what our Bible classes do, but I think it's, I love to see the connections and the discussion. So now, I think I mentioned last class, and I know there's some of you here who may not have been at the last class to contribute to some of the obstacles. I am hoping, God willing, to do a series of these classes, but not exactly like this, but down in Texas in spring, and I wouldn't mind continuing to fill out some of those obstacles. So if you have anything that, so you know what, one for me is just put it, and I can put it down for future reference. So please feel comfortable to come share other things. And then I guess the other piece is, hopefully you had the value in the discussion, but maybe you, if anyone wants to share a specific great idea that you had as a group, that'd be nice. But if not, maybe you can share those great ideas with me afterwards. And again, I can write them down and continue to keep track. So, would anyone have any great or even average ideas that you wanted to share? Donna. Oh, don't diminish it. Would you like me to call her down and do it now, or maybe later afterwards? She could share that with the young people on the side. So the comment that Donna made, for those who might not have heard, was that Sierra is really good at engaging with people, and I presume that implies some of the older generation as well, because young people engage with young people and older with older. So I don't want to diminish that other thing. She's going red, but again, if we wanted to understand how she does it, then you know you can go see Sierra. She'll take appointments afterwards. But I think it's good to know that I think there are a number of connections that get made. I had this conversation at dinner tonight with Mac and Sylvia about, you know, some people feel more comfortable coming up to young people and vice versa, and our young people otherwise. So again, that's one of the areas, but. So some, I'll go get some tips from Sierra after. Is that? Thank you. Yeah. Yeah.
We can see the side of them, because we've got some great young people, and they're our treasures, really, and we can go back to them.
Yeah. Great. Couldn't have said it better myself. Thank you. Anything else that anyone wants to... Sorry?
We have a suggestion that social events can really help.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess with social events... people have to want to come to social events to be and be social, right? So we have to recognize that they have multiple purposes, only one of which is food, but that sometimes brings people. But really, those are the opportunities to sort of get to know people that maybe we otherwise wouldn't spend time with. And so we have to be conscious that the social event, you know, we have to be conscious about what we're going to make out of the social event, I think, too, to help maximize it, to try to really engage. Social events. Oh, we're gonna be like weekly events coming up. I feel like. Yeah. Yeah. That's great. So I'm conscious of time, but thanks for those. And maybe afterwards, again, really hoping I can just jot down a few ideas and stuff so I can kind of continue to grow this. And God willing, I'll put another session on in the new year. Just debating about whether we have a quick look at Nehemiah chapter 7. Well, maybe what we'll do is we won't, other than really just to note... You know, that, you know, as Nehemiah saw the need to now take a community that has rebuilt, restored, it's recovering and has kind of taken some steps to kind of get on a level playing field with each other. You know, he then starts to take steps as we go into chapter 7, 8, and 9, to continue to sort of like, you know, kind of tinker around the edges, I would say, and make certain decisions that kind of help fuel this relationship. You know, the work, you know, doesn't ever cease, does it, brothers and sisters, in our rebuilding efforts. We have to continue to keep at them, and sometimes, you know, I just didn't hear until this evening that Brother Phil Bennett, I was away on Sunday and didn't find out until tonight. So again, we lose another, you know, brick in our wall in a sense and, you know, continue to have to find areas to kind of rebuild and patch. And so, you know, we see ourselves as that community. I'll just read from Ephesians chapter 2 because it kind of puts the whole setting in perspective for us. Because as this would be in Nehemiah's time, but also for us, it says that you are no longer strangers and aliens, but your fellow citizens with the saints and are of God's household. Having been built on the foundation of the apostles and the prophets, Christ Jesus himself being the cornerstone, in whom the whole building being fitted together is growing into a holy temple in the Lord, in whom you also are being built together into a dwelling of God in the Spirit.